Welcome to the Drop-In CEO podcast. I'm Deb Cobiello, and as the Drop-In CEO, I drop into businesses and assume the CEO role to mitigate crises and help teams get back on track. This podcast is about helping the C-suite leader to navigate challenges with confidence. For today's leader, I'm here to help you get back on track. Tomorrow's leader, let me partner with you to learn the secrets of the C-suite. Wherever you're at in your career, this is the podcast for you. Hello, my name is Deb Cobiello, the Drop-In CEO, and I am so grateful you've joined us on another episode of the podcast where week after week, I have the distinct pleasure of interviewing amazing people who provide their insights to you, and I do hope they inspire you. And just know, on a personal note, I do these podcasts because I want to help the C-suite leader of today and tomorrow navigate their challenges, their opportunities with confidence. And today I am so honored to have my guest, Richard Newman, who is the founder of Body Talk. Over the past 23 years, his team has trained over 130,000 business leaders around the world to improve their communication and impact, including one client who gained over $1 billion in new business in just 1 year, winning 100% of their pitches using their strategies that Richard teaches. I am so excited to dive into this. Richard, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much. And thank you for the introduction. It's lovely to talk to you today.
And I am so grateful. Shout out to Mitko, who is an amazing podcast company and individual who introduced me to Richard. But the connection right here is that Richard is so aligned with the Drop-In CEO brand. I do talk about connection. We're going to go way into that because that sometimes is the missing element when it comes to doing business and elevating our careers. We think it's about the tactical work, it's the activity, it's the presentation and all of that. But really, it at the core is about relating to humans and connecting with humans, for which I can't wait for Richard to share his insights, but I'm going to give you the floor. Love for you to share a bit about your backstory and how you arrived at this work.
Thank you. Yeah, well, thrilled to be on the Drop-In CEO, I think from a couple of perspectives. Firstly, because I am a CEO and I love, you know, talking to people who are in this C-suite position, and also because many of our clients are on that sort of leadership level, C-suite, and there's been so many challenges that they've needed us to guide them through in the last few years. So really happy to share anything that I possibly can. My journey to where I am today is sort of, I think of myself as an accidental CEO, if you like. I never intended for this to be my path, but what drove me to be here is simply that when I was 4 years old, my parents moved to a new area. We moved to a new house and I went to a new school. And I distinctly remember on the first day of school, trying to connect with the other children. They just turned away from me and started laughing at me or about me. And I felt really alone. And I did whatever I could to try and connect with them and make friends. And I felt immediately like I was living in a glass bubble, not able to connect with others. And I thought, oh, is there something strange about me? Is there something weird about me? Is there something different about me? And that question stayed with me throughout my school years, to the point where as a teenager, I started to think, yeah, I think there is something different. And it took me a while to work out. I was a very shy child. I'm highly introverted, still am. And I'm also autistic, but I didn't get that diagnosis until about 2 years ago. So it was a lifetime of figuring out what is happening around communication for me that's different. And because I realized I was having that extra challenge there, I then was driven very passionately to investigate communication. And so I started in my teenage years reading books on communication. I started reading around body language, then storytelling, stage presence, anything that I thought would help me connect and communicate with others, and read well over 100 books on communication. And then I decided that I would, when my friends were going off to university, I went off to live in the foothills of the Himalayas in a little Tibetan monastery where I was teaching English to Tibetan monks who wanted to connect and communicate with people beyond their culture. When I arrived there, though, they didn't speak any English, and I didn't obviously speak their language. And so we had to connect completely non-verbally, just to understand each other, to get messages between each other. And it was a struggle to begin with, but I lived there with them for 6 months. And back then, this is 1995, there was no internet, there was no sort of Wi-Fi, WhatsApp, there was no mobile phones. If someone wanted to connect with me from the UK, they had to send a letter and it would take 6 weeks to arrive at the monastery. If I wrote back the same day, it's another 6 weeks to get a reply. So it took 3 months for anyone to hear from me. And so in that time, I was so invested in figuring out I must understand how to communicate non-verbally. And I came back to the UK fascinated by what I learned and kept on going with it. I then studied at a London acting school where I learned more about stage presence and bringing a story to life. And it was actually on stage where I started to think, wow, I feel like I'm getting this now. I feel like I'm able to take a journey through a story, connecting an audience and the other people on stage with me. And we all journey together and we have this same emotional and mental journey that we're going on, totally captivated with each other. And I thought, well, maybe storytelling and body language, maybe these are the elements that I can study further and help myself and also help other people with communication. I started CEOs, I think maybe they appreciate this story thing. Well, how did you start your business? I started it because I was in a hairdressing salon getting my hair cut in London. And my hairdresser said, what do you do? And I said, well, I've been studying acting. I did the teaching the monks and so on. And he said, if I give you a free haircut, would you come and teach my team how to communicate? And I said, I don't know how to do that. And he said, you'll figure it out. Here's a free haircut. And so I came back and I did this free session for them, or for the free haircut. And I was teaching these streetwise London teenagers how to be better communicators as these trainee hairdressers. And they loved it. I thought, okay, well, this is pretty good. And then he said, can you come back again? I kept on going. I did multiple sessions. And then from word of mouth from that salon, people who were getting their hair cut were sort of, there was a head of an engineering company who called me up and said, hey, would you come and train my team? And so I started to run this business, which I've now been running, is now 24 years, in the 24th year. It's been going all this time. And it's just come out of that word of mouth that people need this. So in terms of the C-suite that we work with, we often find that people get to that leadership level because they're really good at something. They're really good at engineering, or they're really good at marketing, or whatever their industry is. And then they have a need for another set of skills. When they get there, being a great engineer or whatever it is not enough, because they now need to be an ambassador of their company, or they need to lead their team with these communication skills that they don't have at that point. So that's a bit of a whistle-stop tour through what got me to where I am and the value I aim to give to CEOs and so on.
Oh, that's an amazing story. And again, my head is nodding. I'm smiling because I've experienced this as well. I mean, to be able to speak, to be able to disseminate information is one thing. Again, that's how we get elevated. But to captivate and bring people in and take them on a journey, almost like going to the movies, where then at the end of two and a half hours, you just have this amazing feeling and time has just passed. And that is our job as leaders, to help people along the way, to guide them, to provide them insights. And through this work, and I'm just so excited, I want to get into the details here, we can transform people and their lives. So are you still going to that same barber or his hair salon?
Do you know, I did. I continued to go to their salon for, I think it was maybe 18, 19 years. And then my original hairdresser, he'd moved on, he'd retired. I was training them as a client. They were a client, I think, for 20 years. And then gradually all the different sort of contacts that I knew had moved on. We got to work with their in-store trainers. We worked with their new salon managers. We worked with their leadership team, who then had to do these on-stage conference speeches in front of thousands of people at their annual events. And I was coaching them on sort of content and delivery style and confidence behind that. So that was amazing. But, you know, the most amazing thing for me is how the business launched from there without me really knowing what I was doing. I just gradually made this hobby bigger and bigger and built up my team. So we now get booked about 2,000 times per year to go and work with clients all the way around the world. So we've gone as far as Australia and South America, South Africa, and Middle East, and everywhere in between.
That's so amazing. And you made time for me today. Yeah. I'm just going to jump over here. I know you and I talked about a game plan here, but I would love to know a story about who is your most challenging client. Like, you, they pulled you in, says, make me a superstar. And you had to say, oh my God, I don't know how I'm going to do that. And then where did they wind up on the other end?
The main thing that really comes to mind is that sometimes I'm training people who have chosen to be in the room, and sometimes I'm training people who have been sent to be trained by me. And that's always a bit of a struggle. So if someone's been chosen to be there, if it's a client we've worked with for a while, there's often a waiting list for people who want to get the coaching. But if they don't know us or they've been sent there, people can come in with resistance. And I remember at one point, I'd set up a training room that I was going to do, had a group of about 12 people coming in. And I went to the men's room and I was walking back. And the two people in front of me walking down the hallway didn't realize that I was behind them. And they were saying, oh, what's this training we're going to? We're going to talk about communication. This guy said, oh, these workshops, they never work. This is never going to improve anything. You know, I am who I am. I'm never going to get better. You can't teach people how to communicate. I coughed and got their attention and said, just so you know, I'm running the session. And you can make a huge transition. Because I started to share with them my story that I came from a background of really struggling with communication. If anybody had diagnosed me as a teenager or as a child, they might have said, look, communication is not going to be your thing. Leave it to the neurotypical people. You're not going to get there. But actually, because I approached it with a growth mindset, I was then able to say, do you know what? I think this is an area that I can get into, and got to the point where I understood communication better than a lot of people because I'd looked at all the books, I looked at all the studies, and I put it into action. I'd had this opportunity to go and deliver so many different times for different clients that I got to a place where I was having a higher appreciation, higher understanding of communication than others. So it's often those people who come in with that resistance where I have to explain to them, okay, there's a path, there's a journey that we're going to go on. The other resistance that tends to come in is people saying, oh, you're not going to make me be something I'm not. People say, well, why can't I just go on stage and just be myself? To which I say to them, okay, if you're going to just be yourself, think about it this way. Think about, I often use the analogy of tennis, but this applies to any sport. I say, think of it about the best tennis player you can think of. Maybe it's, you know, Roger Federer or Serena Williams or, you know, one of these greats from the last couple of decades. Imagine the first time they walked on a tennis court and their tennis coach said to them, you don't need any lessons, just go and be yourself. Well, they wouldn't be a very good tennis player. They'd hit the ball in the net, they'd walk away, they wouldn't be interested. So instead, they learn how to do forehand, backhand, serve and volley. And every tennis player in the world needs to know how to do serve, backhand, forehand, and volley. Otherwise, you can't win the game. But what makes tennis interesting is that every tennis superstar plays the game differently. They have the same fundamentals, but they bring in a personality that's different. And that's what I like to work on with CEOs is that, you know, no matter what their personality is, and some of them are sort of big and wild, crazy personalities, and others are people who would rather never get on the stage. Or sometimes that's actually the CFO. I tend to find is more the person who's like, I don't really want to go up there, but I will go and tell them about the numbers if I have to. It's about a matter of saying, okay, what is your essence? Let's put the fundamentals in place that need to be there for everybody and then bring out you through that method. And then I think that they're much happier about that. And that's why the first major book that I put out about 5 or 6, or maybe it's 7 years ago now, I called it You Were Born to Speak, to say to people, you know, actually having great speaking skills is not about becoming something that you're not. It's actually about getting back to intuition, instincts that you may have had when you were much younger that have been beaten out of you. And once you start to use those more, then you're a much greater communicator. And that's when they relax and go, great, I can do that.
Okay, so on that note, I'm going to give you a virtual hug because that's what happens with society. You move through. I mean, I was a very animated child. I was a talker. You couldn't shut me up. Very expressive. And then something happened. Society put me in a box. I labeled myself as an introvert and lost myself. And as soon as I found the courage and confidence, and I know that's part of your work, I've come out to be myself. And while I am not perfect and I'm trying to tie myself to my table here to not move around and mess my audio up, I'm very expressive, very animated. Yeah. And that's who I am and have come to embrace. And I think that's why the podcast is starting to do better and better, because I trust myself, just be myself and continue to hone my ability to listen and communicate. Now, before we get into your work, I got to ask another question. I'm sorry, it's my show. I'm very curious. You said that you received a diagnosis of autism. And it's funny, I interviewed Leslie Hensel recently on my show, whereby her child was diagnosed with autism, but through significant focused work, the person is thriving. So how did it manifest in you? And curious, how do you leverage it? Because it could potentially be a superpower of yours.
Yes. So this started to come about. For me, it was a long journey to getting diagnosed. It's not something that I ever suspected, because a lot of people who are autistic, they think, okay, these challenges that I'm having, maybe other people are having these challenges, but they're just dealing with it better than me. Maybe they're hiding it well. And so I spent a lot of years really masking that I was struggling in different situations, thinking, well, everybody else seems to look okay. So maybe I just better put on a mask and pretend that I'm okay. But I remember distinctly that there was certain turning points for me. Firstly, there was a dinner party where there were friends of ours who said that they had autism in different members of their family. They're about to have a child. And they did a test to figure out, well, are we likely to have an autistic child? And they said that you can go through a questionnaire to see what is your level of sort of, where would you be on the spectrum? Are you on the spectrum or not? And so we just sort of did it while we're at dinner, passed around a laptop, answered some questions, like 100 questions on there. And it said in there, you got a score of 0 to 50. If you score between 40 to 50, then you're definitely neurotypical. And then it went down the scale. And then it said, if you score between 0 to 5, then you're most likely autistic. You should go and get diagnosed. And they scored like 47, 48 and so on. And I scored 5. I thought they'd played a prank on me. I thought, oh, you've all just answered the question that you, I know which question you're supposed to answer to get the high score. I was just being honest and you weren't. And they're like, no, we've all been honest. And I thought, okay, that's interesting. And then I interviewed somebody on my podcast like a few years ago when I was hosting a podcast. She was involved in early stage communication. So for children up to about the age of 7. And she said that for 90% of children, they'll communicate and develop naturally in that way. Then she said there's 2.5% that will have a permanent communication challenge, like permanent hearing loss, something like that. And she said it's the other 7.5% that she likes to work with. And I said, well, how do you define that 7.5%? She listed these things. And I didn't say it to her during the podcast because I was really processing it, thinking, hang on a second. It was when I drove her back to the train station afterwards. I said, everything you said applies to me. Can you just go back through that list? Because I think I'm in that group. And she said, no, it can't be. You communicate for a living. I said, yeah, but I've had to work very hard to get to that stage. And so she said, yeah, okay, maybe. And so eventually I went to get diagnosed, and it was by the lady who's in charge of diagnosing people in Scotland. She's been in charge of diagnosis for 35 years, I think, for adults and children. And we went through a very thorough process. So I always say to people, if they're interested in it, get the thorough process. We went through many, many hours and many sort of documents I had to complete so she could really measure this. And finally she said, okay, yes, you are autistic. And then it was like me then rolling back through my life for decades thinking, oh, this is why that happened. And this is why that happened. This is why that happened. There's lots of people who are different on the spectrum. So I can only speak for myself particularly. But I did see this with Chase Bank. They said that they looked at their employees and they found that the people who are autistic, who are working for them, are 40% more productive. And they will learn something, a new process or system, in a space of weeks, it would take anybody else months to do, because that sort of special aspect of being autistic. So I noticed that in myself. I do also have to realize that sometimes because of that element, I push myself very hard for a long time. And I need to remember, hang on a second. I'm also supposed to breathe. At some point, I'm supposed to be able to like take a day off, and that's right. Okay too. So there's that piece. The other piece that's been very beneficial for me is that when I'm in a social situation, I don't always understand what's happening, but I'm taking in more of the room. So I've got a heightened sensory situation where, for me, I hear everything at the same volume. So the coffee maker at the end of the restaurant, I'm hearing at the same volume as the person in front of me and every conversation around me. So I'm taking in a lot and can't often process everything or stay completely focused on the conversation. But afterwards, because of that, I've heard so much more than other people. There's more stuff that I'm aware of that I then can think back on and reflect on over a period of time. So that has been beneficial too, to be able to be aware. I can look back in the situation and go, well, that conversation over there went well. What was the person doing? Oh, they were doing these things. This conversation over there wasn't going that well. What was that person doing? And then bring that all in to where I put together a research project back in, I think this is 2016. We got published in the Journal of Psychology, where I put together a whole piece saying, you know, are there elements of nonverbal behavior that could help every leader around the world, no matter their age, their gender, their skin color? Is there something in that? And we got published. We worked on this with UCL, the head of psychology there, who's one of the top 5 psychologists in the world. And we put this together and got this really extraordinary result from it, all of which was really me as an autistic person looking as an outsider on neurotypical communication and noticing things that other people maybe didn't notice, which we can now teach to our clients for them to do day to day.
What an amazing story. And just thank you for playing around with me and going there, because I think there are so many insights. I was even thinking about myself that I could be in a room and hear a lot of noises, but sometimes they kind of cancel each other out. I can't hear certain conversations, but I'm processing it. And I think that's why sometimes I need to go to a very quiet place, because too much stimulation, too much information coming my way overloads me. So I need periodic resets. I need to get away for 5 minutes, recharge, so I can re-engage and get into flow. I wanted to take a moment to remind you that a recent study showed nearly 60% of leaders feel depleted at the end of the day. And this feeling is a key indicator of burnout and makes it difficult to lead and inspire others. If you've ever experienced that restless exhaustion, you know why CEOs are amongst the most likely candidates for experiencing job frustration. I wrote The CEO's Compass, Your Guide to Get Back on Track, to confront those feelings and create a plan that is sustainable for you and your organization. I created a 7-point assessment that will help you figure out your problems in days, not months. And it includes so many resources, worksheets, videos, and much, much more. If this is you, please head over to my website, dropinceo.com, and click on my products, the CEO's Compass, and order yours on Amazon or other outlets. And now, back to the conversation. Well, you started touching on body language, body talk, and the name of your company is Body Talk. But I want to get clear for our listeners, is your company about reading body language, or is it about more than just that?
When I first started my journey of understanding communication, the very first book I ever had on this was given to me as a present for my 16th birthday by someone who said, look, I really think you'll enjoy this. You need to read this. This is going to help you. And it was by Alan Pease. It was his original book on body language from the 1970s or 80s, something like that. And I read it, and it was very much about reading and understanding body language, which suddenly then opened the world to me, thinking, oh, there's something I can see and understand here about other people that actually isn't about their words, because I was always very literal before that. So I thought, well, that was good. But then I thought, hang on a second, what about my body language? What am I doing? What am I projecting? What message am I putting out? So rather than focus on reading people, I thought, let me focus on my presentation of self. And that's the path that I then went down through all the different books and research studies that I looked at and so on, was to think, well, how do you present yourself in a way that is going to be most engaging to make you a more effective leader, more compelling, more convincing, and so on? And so that's the aspect that we work on with our clients, is really around their personal impact, their personal influence, with small changes they can make that make a massive difference, where they can say the same words, they can wear the same clothes, but if they do a slight change in their communication style, it can make a massive difference to the impact, the number of people who listen, who believe in them. Even in this research project, this piece completely blew my mind. We thought that we might get a 5% shift in someone's reaction to you. Maybe 10% would be outstanding. We showed that if you make a couple of small changes, you can increase the number of people who would vote for you in an election by over 57%. By making a couple of tiny shifts, anybody can do. And we nearly fell off our chairs when we saw this. I remember the statistician from UCL who helped us, and he's been working on studies like this for more than 30 years. And when he was handing me the statistics on this piece of paper, his hand was shaking. I said, are you okay? You're having a bad day? You stressed? He said, no, just take a look at these numbers. I cannot believe it. I've checked them. I've double checked them. This is the most rigorous study that I could imagine. And take a look at this. And I said, what am I looking at? He said, for any of this data to be relevant, you need a number on this page that's over the number one. So that's how the statistics worked. He said, you've got a 16. I've never seen a 16 on a study that's as rigorous as this. And so it was very exciting for us to see that. That's what I like to do with CEOs is to bring them in, or, you know, with leaders in general, is to bring them into a room and say, look, I'm going to share with you some stuff that by the end of today, you're then going to walk out and you'll be able to go and rock the next meeting that you do, go onto that conference stage and look entirely confident and feel it in yourself. And nobody will know why. They're not going to go, I know what you did. Yeah, I see what you did. You're doing that gesture. That's I see what you're doing, that facial expression that makes you look good. They'll have no idea. And I love this, just a little story I just thought of. There was a guy I worked with from an insurance company who came on a one-day event I did in London. We went through this training. At the beginning of the day, he was quite sort of leader-like, quite formal, quite contained in himself, just saying how it was. And we worked on some various pieces. Anyway, he gave me a call on Monday, the following Monday. He said, I've just come out of my team meeting and I can't believe what just happened. He said that I loved it. I loved delivering this, hosting this meeting for them. And afterwards, my PA came in to talk to me and just said, what happened to you this weekend? Did you go and do something good? You just seem so different. You seem so fresh and excited and animated. It was just wonderful and everyone connected with you. She didn't say, oh, your body language was different. She didn't have any idea. So it's, you know, small things that make a big difference, which is really where the key can be.
Oh, that's beautiful. And I really appreciate all this insight and just I love interviewing you. You've got so many engaging stories. So I really hope my listeners are taking away so much. Before we even get into your book, we're going to get into Lift Your Impact shortly. But you said something. I have read hundreds of books on communication, and ultimately you've evolved your own style to enable others. But what's the worst piece of advice you have read or heard from somebody regarding communication? Because you must have seen something that was, they got it all wrong. Because I tell people, don't always follow what the gurus say. You need to develop your own opinion and style as well.
Yeah. The area that stands out for me when, you know, I think about bad advice is generally when it's around manipulation. And whenever I've read a book, that it's clear that what they're trying to propose is that you do stuff that will force someone to think a certain way. And it's clearly a win-lose situation. That's always heading in the wrong direction because the person might be convinced for a moment, but then they'll leave the room and think, I feel like I've been hoodwinked here. And then you've lost your credibility and reputation forever. So anything heading in that direction. And I do remember I was seeing a guy, went to this conference in London. There was this guy there pitching his power presentation method or something along those lines. And I remember sort of, I was sitting quite near the front and he was saying how he's an amazing presenter. He'll teach you to be an amazing presenter. But this guy was standing right at the front of the stage where half of his foot was off the front of the stage and half of his foot was on the stage. He said that if you put both of your feet together and stand like this on the front of the stage and you raise one hand in the air, everyone thinks you're very powerful. And I thought, all I'm thinking is, I hope he doesn't fall off the stage. I also know that scientifically, what he's saying is completely false because we know that having feet together lowers your status. And it's very simple for people to test. If anyone listening to this stands up and puts their feet together, ask someone to come over to you and touch your shoulder. Just gently nudge you sideways on your shoulder. You will fall over. The reason being that your center of gravity is very high and you are physically a pushover in that situation where, you know, this phrase of being a pushover is associated to having weak ideas and so on. So we know that it's terrible. It doesn't have gravitas. If you want to have gravitas, you can look at any sport, look at anybody that you like in any sport. When they're about to do something important, what do? Do they stand with their feet together with maybe like half their feet off the stage or whatever that would be for them? No, of course not. What do? They're preparing if they are playing basketball, if they're playing tennis, if they're playing golf. They're about to do something important. They put their feet shoulder width apart and they balance themselves between left foot, right foot, toes and heels. They get in the ready position and they're in full physical command and then they do something. We've studied this scientifically and we find this with leaders as well. If we can get them away from that sort of military stance of feet together, like you're standing to attention, make sure that they are with their feet shoulder width apart, then suddenly they are much more grounded and they are much more physically engaging with others.
Okay, so really appreciate that. And that is a key takeaway for anybody here who is about to take a deep breath and have to try to make an amazing impact. Get that super stance, ground yourself, and move forward. Now, let's just get to some of the most important work that you've done. You are releasing or have recently released Lift Your Impact, your most recent book. I didn't realize this was your second book, so congratulations. Tell me more about the purpose of this book and the impact that you want to have.
Sure. Yeah. So with my original book, You Were Born to Speak, in there, I was really going through communication skills for people to give them everything I could to make sure that they understand that anyone can speak. And I launched that, I think it was 2017, 2018. When we got to 2020, things really shifted. I'd been running a company for 2 decades then, and I noticed there was a sizable shift in the requests that we were getting for what people really needed from us. So it went from, I need to have, you know, public speaking presentation skills to, I'm really struggling in my mindset and we are struggling as a team. And there was 3 big things that came up. So firstly, people were saying they and their teams were feeling very stressed. So they were feeling stressed about working from home, working remotely from each other, having to share the Wi-Fi with 3 teenagers who were, you know, homeschooling at the time through the pandemic. They reduced the company size, but they had to hit bigger targets. Their KPIs were all going up. And there's just a huge amount of stress there. And if you think about the number of meetings, if you think back to 2019, if you had 3 meetings in a day, well, that's the maximum you could drive to. You couldn't drive to more than that. Whereas these days with Teams and Zoom and all these different things, you can end up having 17 meetings a day. So people are getting very stressed. The second thing that we noticed is that people felt more lonely, more disconnected from each other. There's more conflict in the office. There's more of a sense of a lack of influence, ability to connect and influence and persuade people around them. Thirdly, we noticed a lot of people having a lack of purposefulness where, you know, there's been the great resignation, people leaving the workforce thinking, I don't know what I'm doing here anymore. It's just a steel and glass building and I'm a cog in a machine. I don't understand. Why am I here? And so I wanted to address those 3 big things in this book to give people, firstly, a rock solid mindset so they can be the rock in the storm. No matter what is going on around them, they can be rock solid and the team can rely on them to be that. Secondly, increasing your personal influence and a positive influence on the people around you to have a deeper connection with people, not being able to just project messages, but to be able to have a sense of understanding with other people. And then when you've got that piece, then looking beyond that, thinking, well, what do you want your future to be? What is this for? If you've got a great mindset and you influence people, where does that head? And how do you make sure you've got a really meaningful, purposeful future that you're going to be heading towards for you and for your team and for your company? And so I put it into this book, and it's a workbook. So I had to persuade my publisher on this. I said, let's just make it workbook style so that people are taking part in the book all the way through. So it's their book rather than it just being my book. Yeah, I feel really proud with what we've achieved with that.
You know, it's very interesting that you bring up those topics, because you can give people the technical capability to deliver a good presentation. But at the core of what you talk about, it's about the human connection. And if we're not whole ourselves, if we are stressed, we go on stage and say, well, I hope they like what I have to say, versus being confident that my stories will connect with people, it's going to negatively impact the outcome that you were hoping to achieve. So I certainly recognize that that is also core to what I do. I also meet with some amazing technical people, and they find that they cannot get further in the organization, whether it's communication, self-advocacy, or what have you. And at the core, we've lost some connection with ourselves and with humanity. And so it's not woo-woo anymore. Our bodies are living things that have chemistry and electricity. And if we're not feeling whole, if we've got butterflies in our stomach, we need to listen to those things and understand them. So I appreciate this body of work that you've done to focus in on that. And I will just a quick plug for my book, The CEO's Compass. Your guide to get back on track, the first chapter is about, I'm talking to you. And, you know, you've been successful in the past. And if what you're doing is no longer giving you the results, maybe it's your leadership style. Maybe it's your confidence. Maybe it's your mindset or limiting beliefs. We need to focus on you. And it's not selfish. We do need to take time to focus on ourselves so that we can tell the stories and communicate with humanity in the way that you're trying to project as well.
Great. I'm going to check out your book. That sounds fantastic.
No, I appreciate that. And forgive me, I missed it. It's coming out real shortly, your book?
It came out in May last year. So it's available everywhere now. There's a hardback, an audio book, which I narrated, and an ebook format as well.
I'm going to ask you, and again, I'm not asking you to give away the book, but if you could just give away or share just a little bit, because I want my audience to take away something today in addition to the holding their stance. But you talk about having groundbreaking communication techniques. If there is something that somebody could take away today to increase their confidence and their impact when it comes to communicating, what would that be?
So one of the big pieces I talk about in the book that is so helpful for every type of communication. So whether you're sending an email, having a phone call, having a quick conversation, doing a presentation, one of the key bits that I go into is the science behind storytelling. So this is something that I wanted to understand, because I knew when I stood on a stage as an actor that I could connect with characters and I could connect with the audience. I kept on thinking, but how do I do that in day-to-day life? And there's lots of people out there who we'll talk about the theory of storytelling. So some people have heard about the hero's journey, Joseph Campbell's work, and the 17 stages of the hero's journey. The challenge with it, even though it's brilliant as a piece of work, if you're creating a three-hour Hollywood epic, you want to have the 17 stages of the hero's journey. But if you're writing an email, it's not as effective, because you can't go through the belly of the whale and the denial of the quest every time you have a conversation in a hallway with someone. What I aim to do is to bring that all the way down to just a few simple steps that people need to have. So we've got five steps that you can use, and you can see them in a TV commercial that's 30 seconds long. You can see each of these elements show up if it's an effective commercial. So I broke it down for people to say, this is what you actually need to do. And the key piece that I'm really talking about in there, and this is key for leaders to think about with their communication, is to think the human brain, if you want to engage everybody, there's this triune brain, the three-part brain, which Paul McLean popularized back around 1990 when his book came out, which says that we've got a survival mind, an emotional mind, and a logical mind. And if you think about, you know, 99% of the business meetings that are out there, they spend at least 90% of the time in the logical mind, giving people data and bullet points and graphs and spreadsheets and so on. And we leave the meeting with cognitive fatigue. We then need to have two cups of coffee before we go to the next meeting, where it's all about the cognitive fatigue again. And so instead, what I talk about in here is saying, if instead in your email and your phone call and your meeting presentation, if you engage the survival mind first, where you let people understand, why is this critical to me and my core values right now? Then people are listening. They think, I'm going to switch on my listening. I'm going to remember. I'm going to engage. Then you engage the emotional mind. And you talk not about your solution, not about your product, services, your new initiative, and so on, but talk about a better future. Describe, hey, after this thing I'm going to announce happens, in 3 months' time, 6 months' time, a year from now, this is where we will be, which is important for you, not just me, not my company, not my profit line and all this stuff. It's going to be important for you because you will be able to experience this and you will do this. So you're talking to them as, importantly, the audience is the hero that's going on the journey, not the person, not the product, not the company. So you engage them there. So at this point, the survival mind has said, I think that I should listen to this. The emotional mind says, wow, give me this stuff. And then the logical mind says, hello, hang on a second, I need some facts here. Let's not get too excited. Tell me how this stuff is going to work. And then all three parts of the mind are fully aligned and fully engaged in information. And if you remember that, you can use that in a 30-second conversation in a hallway. You can use it if somebody comes into your office and says, look, can I talk through this project with you? I don't really understand it. What are your thoughts? Rather than thinking, oh, give me 20 minutes and I'll get you some thoughts together, you can just go, bang, I'm going to go survival mind, emotional mind, logical mind, and they'll leave the office going, wow, I'm so glad that I had that conversation with you.
Okay, so that is another amazing, out of maybe 100 amazing sound bites. We're also going to be putting out some amazing video clips out on YouTube. That was tremendous insight. I took note, and I do hope my listeners truly, truly internalize, value it, and leverage that insight. So, you know, you have been an amazing guest. You have amazing stories, and I was taken on a journey with you. So I do just want to say thank you. But if there were any last closing thoughts or how people can connect with you, and people listening now, I want you to connect with Richard Newman and get his book, Lift Your Impact. You're going to get such value. I'm going to give you the stage one last time.
Thank you. Well, yeah, if people want to go further, great. If they get the book, they can also find me at ukbodytalk.com. Be happy to sort of share, you know, what we can offer them. I'm on Instagram at Richard Newman Speaks. I aim to put up sort of little 60-second videos to help people there. But the last message I always love to give to CEOs as the leadership advice that I aim to stand by. As a leader, always aim to see people's greatness. And what I mean by that is for all the people around you, believe in them more than they believe in themselves, not in a way that's phony, but genuinely see the greatest version of them when they walk into your office so that they start to see that in themselves. And you may be surprised by what a remarkable team you then start to have. They want to work with you because they know that you see that within them. And then you start to rise, which is something that happened for me when I sat in a hair salon 24 years ago. This hairdresser saw something in me I didn't know I could have. And as a result, we've gone on to train over 100,000 people. See their greatness would be my last message.
Oh, I love that. And just a last message for my listeners, going off of what Richard's just shared, is that if somebody sees something in you, please listen. Please listen, because that could be your greatness. So Richard, thank you for dropping in on the podcast. You were an amazing guest. I wish you well and continued success.
Thank you for listening to the Drop In CEO podcast. I hope you are inspired by our conversation and can apply what you heard to your business or career goals. If you found this valuable, please share this show with at least one friend who will find it useful and inspiring. When you share this podcast, it allows me to continue to help C-suite leaders of today and tomorrow to navigate their challenges with confidence. To connect with me or learn more about the Drop-In CEO services, go to my website at dropinceo.com. And until we meet, I wish you well and much success.